It's That Podcast, recording live from Studio B in Strawberry Blonde Studios. It's That Podcast, featuring Joe Lindholm and Jason Shirley. I digress. Hello, Brent.
You fret. You got a 10-pound shunk and a 5-pound bat.
It's a good man. Good man in the community. Sup, ha! Tell him your name sent you.
A3.
Live from Studio B, it's That Podcast, featuring Joe. I digress. And Jason.
Hello, Brent. Give me some of that dogger. This up, please. I'll make it enough. Sup, ha!
And tell him your name sent you.
Live from Studio B in Strawberry Blonde Studios. It's That Podcast.
Welcome to It's That Podcast, episode 20. I am your co-host, Joe Lindholm, along with Jason Shirley. Jason, tell what time it is.
Hold it now!
Public enemy.
Come on!
Let him down.
What's good, man?
It's all good. Kid, especially when you give me some Public Enemy. Especially when you do that. Welcome to It's That Podcast, episode 20. We hope you enjoyed last week's episode about the old sports-a-roo. We're going to finish it up in a bow because there's something we meant to mention about sports gambling.
Sorry.
Sports gambling. It's something that we meant to touch on, just ran out of time. So we said a couple podcasts ago that by the time that podcast would have aired, they would have started gambling in Jersey. That's not quite there just yet. Very
gambling is illegal at Bushwood, sir, and I never slice.
That's right. Smales, you never slice. So by the time this podcast airs, we actually have some dates. So Delaware is going to be the first one, believe it or not. Now, Delaware was already, they were part of the original four states that could do it for some reason. I don't know why Delaware was, but they were part of the first four, like Nevada. They weren't part of the new breed of states. They were already included. So on June 5th.
Lucky.
Yeah, got that right. At Delaware Racetracks, you'll be allowed to sports bet. Starting June 5th. Jersey is going to be right on their heels. The governor is expected to sign the bill on June 7th. They're going to take action at all, at Monmouth Park anyway, in Jersey, starting June 8th. It was also announced that all the major sports networks on TV, so ESPN, Fox Sports 1, NBC Sports Network, are all going to be doing a gambling show in some form or another. There's one on ESPN Plus, which is ESPN's new streaming service that started last week. And then CBS has an online dealio, which I don't, have you ever seen it?
I haven't.
Yeah.
Now, is this to teach dummies how to use the kiosk, make informative bets?
Yeah, that's what it is. It's more like, hey, this guy is this and this against this team that they're playing, or he has this many things against the thing with the thing. More of an analysis type show.
Okay. Kind of like they have for fantasy.
Yeah, pretty much. How they have Fantasy Football Sundays on ESPN, for sure. Anyway, so the CBS Online Network has had a gambling show ever since their beginning. I think they started 3 months ago or something like that. But they've had one from the jump. And I was reading an article today. NBC News posted online about, will the U.S. be like the U.K. is in terms of gambling? So there's a neighborhood in London called East Ham, right? And on a 1.3-mile stretch of through this neighborhood, there are 15 betting parlors. In a mile, less than a little over a mile stretch, 15 betting houses. That's the highest proliferation of shops in the U.K. But it goes to the point of what I was talking about a few podcasts ago about how there's going to be one every corner, basically. That's how it is in the UK. Now, I don't know if that's the way it's going to be here. I doubt it because of the proliferation of mobile. I mean, there still could be betting kiosks. I'm not saying there won't be, but it may be limited
to like racetracks.
Yeah, like Illinois, for example. They're doing that. And anybody listening from the state of Illinois here, not from the state of Illinois, but lives in the state of Illinois, you can.
They're always trying to screw you.
You can just about forget about sports betting this year. Representative Lou Lang was quoted as saying it's more important that they do it right than do it fast, which I'm not 100% disagreeing with them. But there has to be a sense of urgency right? Yeah. There has to be.
Or you're going to lose Arlington.
Yeah, exactly correct. And the racing industry in this state is over a $1 billion business, and you're just going to lose it. Representative Robert Rita, who is the chair of the Illinois House Gaming Subcommittee. That's a lot to say in Jesus. One breath.
It's all could shady. Be
more. It's just shady, right? He says that he's rekindled the Chicago casino bill because they want one in Chicago in the worst way.
Mm-hmm.
And adding placeholder articles for sports betting, daily fantasy sports, which is technically illegal, but you can still play it, and online gambling, meaning online poker.
What was the name of that daily fantasy thing that got busted?
Out
of business.
Well, there's still FanDuel and DraftKings.
Okay.
And both, by the way, FanDuel got bought by a UK betting house, Paddy Power, Betfair. They bought a controlling interest in FanDuel. DraftKings is going to open their own sports book.
Okay.
So they're going to get a piece of that action, believe it or not. Certain members of the Congress tried to rush it through before Memorial Day, tried to get it in because the session adjourned technically today, May 31st, as we tape this. It went through committee and won 5-4. That's the good news. Bad news, need 6 to get to the floor.
Mm.
So it never made it out of committee.
So basically somebody hasn't greased Madigan yet.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Or Rauner. Based on the way... But
no, Madigan is the one that allows things to go to the floor.
That's true. That's probably true. But they said based on the way the hearing went, that they're pretty positive something's going to happen in 2019. It said that there was one shot of them getting it sooner than that, and that's if Rauner vetoes the budget and they have to reconvene for an emergency session. It could get reintroduced then. But all systems are indicating Rauner's going to sign the budget because it passed today in the House.
Oh.
Today, Madigan apparently blessed it.
Wow.
99-15. So Rauner's going to sign it, he said, and so that's, you can forget about that.
Wow.
Yeah. It gives them time till November to get more support. Gives them time to drum up support for it. And here's the part that of this article that girked me big time. It says, and gives them a sense of urgency if neighboring states pass their own legislation. Meaning, Illinois, once again, is being reactive instead of proactive.
Right, but who would that be? I don't see Iowa doing it. I don't see Indiana doing it.
Wisconsin.
Maybe Iowa.
Maybe Wisconsin. Maybe Indiana. But the thing is that Illinois just basically gave up for this year. It was, fuck it. We're going home. We battled for our budget.
Yeah.
And for those of you outside of Illinois and outside maybe of the states in general, the state of Illinois has not had a budget.
A balanced budget.
Balanced. Since Rauner took office.
Well, no. They haven't.
2016, I believe.
You were absolutely correct. They haven't had a budget since Rauner took office.
Right.
There hasn't been a balanced budget in 30 years.
And I believe it's state law.
Yeah.
I believe it's a state law. You have to balance budget.
And they haven't.
But apparently this one is balanced.
It can't be.
That's what they claim. I don't see how it is either, but they say it's balanced. So, I don't know.
We take in $1 and spend $4.
That's that's the way to do it, at least in our state. So in summary, Delaware looks like they're getting ready to crack down, getting ready to go by the time this episode drops. We'll have two states, Delaware and New Jersey, both taking bets on sports at racetracks, which is exactly what I want Illinois to do. So that's at least my take on that, on sports gambling. I don't know if you have any more to add.
No,
yeah, but we all know. And plus another reason why, just to, I totally forgot this point too. It's an election year, so
yeah,
right. We got Rauner could not be there next November. Instead, JB Prickster is going to be there.
Jesus,
maybe again failed us big time. Both did. So we're going to move things along to some music things that we've enjoyed recently or have listened to recently. So back in 2016, Steve Earle, who both Jason and I are big fans of, and I didn't even know about this. I don't know how this escaped my prowess, so to speak, made an album with Sean Colvin. I don't know how I missed this. Like, how did that slip through my radar? But it did, apparently. 2016, June 10th is when the album was released. It's just called Colvin and Earle. And the song that I found and I listened to on Spotify today was called You're Right, I'm Wrong. And it's very good. Highly recommend anything with Steve Earle, pretty much, unless he's covering a Sunvolt song. Which I found also on the internet today. Here's what I looked on the internet today, and I found this. Steve Earle apparently covered a beloved song by Jason and I, and Tommy too. Tommy loves the song, right, Tom? He's nodding his head. Okay, good. Windfall by Sunvolt, and he covered it, and it's okay. It's not great, but it's not bad. But the problem is it was also recorded live. And anytime you get a cover live, it's hit or miss. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it's really, really good. Like when Isabel covers Atlantic City live.
Right.
It's incredible. But it's okay. It's not anything to write home about necessarily. But is there anything that you found on the interwebs music-wise?
Music-wise, what have I been listening to a lot lately? We've kind of gone through that last time. I've been, I don't know if it's again age or what, but kind of quiet slow jams have been my thing lately, man.
Yeah.
Not too much of the screaming rock and roll.
Yeah.
So
it has to do with, you know, where you're at in your life too.
Yeah.
Like sometimes you just want to slow down a bit. It doesn't all have to be 90 miles an hour.
True. Although Tommy hit me to somebody. Remember that? It's a band, like 19, early 70s, England.
Yeah.
The Status Quo.
Yeah. Yeah, Status Quo. Yeah, for sure.
So... And, of course, this is right in our Tom's wheelhouse.
Correct.
Whereas Joe and I might try to find a band that sounds like that today, Tom just goes out and
to the source.
Yeah.
Which is fine by me.
Right.
For sure. No, I'm perfectly okay with that. Just kind of just go to the source. No, Status Quo's good. They're a good band, for sure. And we recorded this last weekend, which we'll release some stuff here soon. We just got we got clearances from everybody. Got to get the thumbs up.
Right.
But one of the songs had a cool little, a few of them actually, a couple of them we recorded Thursday, or Saturday I should say, were a good groove. They were all right. Something like 70s-ish.
Sure.
So looking forward to hearing that.
I dug them.
Sure. Yeah, for sure. One band we both like is the band Lucero.
Yeah.
And they're an acquired taste. The music is really, really good, but Ben Nichols sounds like he gargled with gravel. His voice is, for lack of a better word and a pun, grating in a way. It's something you have to grow into. It's really kind of sounds like this. And it's clarity is not in his voice. It is not a beautiful, he doesn't seem like an angel, put it that way. But you can tell he's been through the wars and been through the bars and been through a lot. At least he conveys that in his singing. And they have a new song called For the Lonely Ones. And their new album comes out August 3rd. Highly recommend the song. It's very good. It's a rocker, as they are known to do. And they do some ballads, of course. But if you've never heard Lucero, I highly recommend. There was a stretch of a couple albums. First one was not their first album, but the first one that really hit home was Bike Riders. And then the two after that, which I, off the top of my head, I don't remember the name of, but that album and the two after it were really, really, really good. Good stuff. Ben Nichols is a great songwriter. And live, they're killer. They're really killer live band. The clips I see on YouTube makes me want to go see them. And they're playing in Chicago. Guess where they're playing? The place where Lindy doesn't go anymore.
Oh.
Aragon Ballroom.
Oh, okay.
No thanks. Keep it. But they're playing in Indianapolis.
Huh.
Which isn't How far is Indianapolis from here?
We missed them. They played the Castle, and we missed them here.
Yeah. I feel I regret that.
We can't go to every show in Chicago.
That's right. But, yeah, if they played anywhere else in Chicago, I'd probably go. That'd be a great Vic show.
Yeah?
For sure.
Yeah.
But they're playing the Aragon Ballroom, so it's like...
Yeah, I don't do the Brawl Room anymore. I also don't do the Riv anymore.
I saw Wilco there.
I'm kind of over it.
Yeah. I don't like... Any place that big where you have to stand.
Yeah.
Like, the Riv is a pretty big theater. You got to stand the entire time.
You do.
Like, I can't... I'm too old for that shit.
Yeah?
Too old and too fat. I can't stand for all that. The Castle's nice because they'll throw you a chair if you need it.
Yeah.
Right? Like, hey, look, I got an arthritic knee. Can you just slide me a chair? And they don't care. As long as you're not interfering with anybody, they don't care.
Right.
It's laid back. Whereas the Riv, no shot.
No shot.
But that Matthew Sweet show we're going to go to July 11th. Hoping to snag a chair for that.
Yeah.
Another band we both enjoy, Dawes, which they can be kind of hit or miss, quite frankly. But we enjoy the ups. We enjoy the good songs. And this is a really good one. Their new album comes out June 22nd. And the song's called Crack the Case. And it hit the first verse or two really hit home for me. So I highly recommend it. I wrote down in my little notes here, 5 stars. It's a fantastic song. Their new one comes out June 22nd. And then one other thing that came out recently, it's actually out, The Smithereens, unfortunately. Their lead singer, Pat D'Anizio, passed away December 12th of 2017. And they went back through all their tapes and basically released a covers album. So every song just about that they covered, well, not every song, because they did entire Beatle albums, but a mix-mosh of covers of theirs. They have stuff from The Who, Iggy Pop, Beatles, One After 909's on that.
Nice.
It's really good. And what's the other one? I forget. But a variety of covers. They did a Beach Boys song. Believe it or not, I don't know how they pulled that off, but they did. It sounded really good. So a posthumous release from the Smithereens, a bunch of covers that they did. So
good for them.
Yeah. What else have you been listening to, Jay?
John Moreland.
Yeah.
Is my new guy. Nashville singer-songwriter for years. Miranda Lambert. He's the only guy that she'll take songs from.
Yep.
And basically it's all this stuff's right in my wheelhouse right now, man. It's slow, it's soulful, it's
right. And very, very reminiscent of Chris Stapleton. Super.
You said Springsteen at first.
And when I first heard him sing, I was talking about the vibe.
Got it.
The vibe's very Chris Stapleton, but the singing wise you'll hear it in a minute. Sounds like Springsteen to me. Which, if the music wasn't so good, would be a bad thing.
I know.
My opinion. But
no, I hear you. I see where you're coming from with that. In fact, I had another friend that said, I asked him if he'd heard John Moreland, and he goes, yeah, that new album he's got, that's the best thing Springsteen's done in years.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't particularly care for Bruce Springsteen's voice. I don't. I don't know if that's sacrilege or
no,
not,
it's not,
but
in my book.
I don't care for the boss.
It's you and me, buddy. It's you and me against the world.
Yeah, so I don't hear that. Either I have a blind spot for it, or I just think he sounds like him.
Right.
And what's funny, I mean, this guy's always had amazing songs, and it's not like, oh, well, you know, why didn't they just market him in Nashville? Because he's a large cat. He's probably 3.5 spins.
Yeah. So my size.
So, well, maybe 4. He's larger than you.
Well, is he taller than me? Like, he's probably.
I don't think so.
I don't know. I'm of average height.
He's a very round man.
Yeah.
But in the record companies told him at first, we can't sell that.
Right.
So the best chance you have is to write for other people.
Right.
And
or one other option, do it yourself.
Yeah.
Do it like Jason Isbell does it.
Yeah.
Just do it yourself. Fuck everybody else.
And basically, that's what they came to. He got put on a blacklist for writing, and he just, you know, said, screw this.
Yeah.
And, you know, it started small grassroots. And the guy's been around since 2011. That's when he put his first solo album out.
Yeah.
And just really starting to get traction now.
Good.
So.
Good.
My buddy Jay turned me on to him.
Yeah, and
so thank you for that, Jay.
Yeah. Isbell, his solo stuff started out that way, really slow, niche, dedicated fans,
right?
But real, not a lot of them. And then he started, you know, then he released Southeastern, and then he released Something More Than Free, and then released Natural Sound. Now he said something about, it's really nice now to be able to afford a tour bus. And they have two of them, right? Because they have one for his family,
right?
The baby, and then one for the band, for the rest, for the 400 unit. So, by the way, I don't know. Do we ever tell the story of why they're called the 400 unit?
I don't believe we have.
This is an awesome story. So, Jason Isbell is having lunch in his hometown, Florence, Alabama. And there's a mental hospital called the 400 unit. And they bring mentally handicapped people into town and let them shop. And they bring them all in a big white van, open the doors, and they kind of fall out, but they come out, right? And Jason Isbell goes, well, that's us every tour stop. Like, we pull up in our van, we all get out and kind of stumble around. And so he named the band the 400 unit. That's why they're called the 400
unit.
Wow. Yeah.
I don't think I knew that, Joe.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, I for some reason, I always thought it had something to do with the 40 Watt Club.
No, that's what I thought first, too. And then he explained it. I'm like, oh, makes perfect sense.
It now, does it's make all perfect kind sense.
Of, exactly, makes perfect sense.
Well,
but anyway, back to Mr. Moreland.
The phrase out of left field.
Yeah.
You've heard that one?
Yeah.
That they used to have a mental hospital behind Wrigley.
Really?
I
did not know that.
And that's where that...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there you go. That's out of left field, surely.
That's right.
That is. Literally, no, I mean...
Really, guy wandered right in.
Wandered right on the field at Wegman Park. Where the hell it was called back then.
Where the orphans played.
That's right.
Oh, I feel a lot of corrections corners coming on.
Oh, who knows? For that. Yeah, maybe so. Who cares?
Yeah, man. That's where I've been living.
Yeah. For sure. And like I said, I just sat and just listened to a lot of Spotify lately, trying to find new stuff because I'm in a rut little bit, what I've been listening to. So I've been trying to kind of go out and find stuff. And luckily I stumbled upon a bunch of stuff from bands I like anyway. That hasn't been released yet. They have a single each, like, you know, Lucero and Dawes. And I found that Colvin, Steve Rowe thing. Like, what's this? Like,
Yeah, I was a Sean Colvin fan.
Yeah.
Way back when.
Yeah.
God, that was high school, probably the 80s.
Yeah. That was Heckler's Records time.
Yeah.
For sure. I mean, Rose Records for you and Heckler's Records for me. So to touch on music again.
Just keep touching her.
We were, of course, just the right way.
Yeah.
We were talking about guitarists.
Yeah.
One of the topics that we were talking about, we each made separate lists. And separate topics of our list.
I changed mine to yours.
So you changed mine. Okay. All right. So I wrote down, we were talking online about show ideas, and Jason brought up, we should do guitarists like that influence us or whatever. And I'm like, okay, great idea. So I have 10, I think it's 11. 10, it's 11, but two of them are from one entity. So I'm going to count that as 10. That's number 10. That one's 10. That influences the way we write songs, the way we play, or whatever. So we have some. We noticed that there were some semblances of likeness between the two lists. That makes perfect sense, quite frankly, because we're a lot alike in terms of our musical taste. But why don't you kick us off, Jay?
I'm going to give you my number one is Chuck Berry. If I could play like anybody, I would be that guy. I would make everything I sound like that guy. And actually, I'm going to give you the first three because they're all kind of in the same tree. Two would be Keith Richards, and number three would be Angus Young.
Yeah.
So those are my three probably most influential, I would say.
Yeah, they don't fall far from the tree.
Everybody else on my list, everybody else on my list is kind of... Not as dominant,
right.
I should say.
Right. I'll say my time. I'm written down in no order, but I can easily give you the three that would influence me. That would be Eric Clapton, Cream, 60s Eric Clapton, not Forever Man, or If I Could Change the World.
In the way that you use it.
Yeah. No, not that. Would be Alex Lifeson from Rush. and probably Jimmy Page from Zeppelin. Now, those are the three. Keith is definitely on my list. Actually, I wrote him down first, but I didn't come to Keith till much later. I mean, I started playing guitar when I was 8.
Wow.
So when I was 8, it was, these were the bands that my, some of the bands my brother was listening to. So I just picked them up and my friend's older brother was listening to, that kind of thing. So it was always either Clapton, Alex Lifeson from Rush, or Jimmy Page from Zeppelin. Like those were the three that the first, I don't know, 5 years I played, I tried to play every song that they, that they, that I could learn how to play. And Alex Lifeson was a little too high for a young lady trying to learn how to play guitar.
Right.
But Jimmy Page was pretty easy.
Sure.
It wasn't super difficult. Clapton was obviously, I got to Clapton a little bit later too, but the way his voicing is when he plays solos is just ridiculous.
That phrasing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you know, like, we're, and that's another thing we're talking about before, mm-hmm. Before we hit record. Guitarists, that when they hit one note, and you know it's him, right?
Mm-hmm.
And guys in that list we named off were like Eddie Van Halen,
mm-hmm.
Stevie Ray Vaughan, Hendrix, Clapton, to a certain extent, Mike Campbell, Lindsey Buckingham for sure, just the way he plays. Guitarists like that, like people that really developed their own thing and didn't give a shit about anybody else. This is how I'm going to sound. And no matter what record they played on.
Right.
Right. Like as soon as you heard the solo from Beat It, it's Eddie Van Halen.
Right.
It's not somebody trying to be Eddie Van Halen. It's Eddie Van Halen.
I'm going to put The Edge on that list too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, to a certain extent. We talked Bo Diddley and Buddy Holly and
yeah, The Edge has got to be on that list too, I guess. Yeah. Cause just the way, mainly the way he uses effects.
That's,
he was the first one to really go hog wild. Well, not the first one. That's probably not true. Tom Scholz is probably the first one, but he's another guy too.
Well, and Gilmore.
And Gilmore to a certain extent. Sure. But definitely, Edge with that flange and the chorus and delays and everything else that started coming out around the time that he started hitting it.
Right.
For sure. He developed his own thing.
I mean, when he shows you that he's playing one note to get this cacophony of noise coming out.
Yeah. When he's on It Might Get Loud, he's playing two notes.
Yeah.
But the way the chorus and the flanger and the delays, his effects are set up, it sounds like there's 10 guitars playing. Yeah.
Exactly. It's so good.
Yeah. And he was the, it wasn't the, he may not have been the pioneer of that, but he definitely took it and made it his own, for sure.
Agreed. Now imagine me at the age of, tender age of 13, with my Sears Harmony guitar, Tobacco Sunburst, playing through a bass amp that I'd blown out the speaker in it, so it had built-in distortion. Putting on Get Your Ya-Ya's Out, and then just, every song, I just would bend one note and think I sounded like the coolest guy.
Look at that. Ever. Of course.
Like, oh, it fits right in.
Oh, man, I can play Tom Sawyer. I can play the rhythm guitar and Tom Sawyer. Oh, man, oh, yeah, I'm great. Look at me. But it takes baby steps.
It does, man.
This thing. So, and I can attest to you about getting your own sound. I mean, I've got, to my left, I have effects that are sitting on a desk here in a box waiting for my pedal board, but I'm hoping that I can translate all this into a sound for myself. Something that's mine, that's not somebody else's. I hope.
Right.
But we'll see. Do you have anybody else on your list there?
I'm sure you want to throw out a few?
Oh, yeah, sure. I said my three. Also on this list is Keith Richards, obviously. Steve Howe from Yes. I've always wanted a 335. I think he's the reason why I've always wanted a 335 Gibson.
Yeah.
Not B.B. King.
No.
It was Steve Howe, if I'm 100% honest. And then other older guitarists like Mick Taylor, obviously, from the Stones. And then once my nephew dropped R.E.M. on me, Peter Buck became a big influence on the way I play guitar and what I play. Then later in my development, probably the last 10 years or so, without a doubt, Jason Isbell's guitar playing and Jay Farrar, his rhythm playing, kind of back picking.
Mm-hmm.
And to a certain extent also, you know, Mike Cooley and Patterson Hood from Drive-By Truckers to an extent too, the back picky kind of thing going on. And then for certain solos, especially one this last Saturday, or not so much solos, but the rhythm part, this one part, Iron Maiden, brother.
There it is. Call them out.
Adrian Smith and Dave Murray from Iron Maiden. The way they played their solos in unison and played in fifths and got that sound, that Iron Maiden, if you've never heard it, please go listen to them. They're incredible. But the way the two interacted with each other, the two guitarists in that band, was just ridiculous. They were both, they could have been successful with just one. That's how good they are. I mean, they could have easily been successful with just one. But they got both of them, thank God.
And
it's their sound. It's what made them what they are.
Exactly. That's what I was going to go to. When you hear that dual solo,
yeah,
it's Maiden.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not anybody else.
No. No, it's not. It's not Metallica. They ripped off Maiden. And, you know, to a certain extent, I'll even give Judas Priest their due. KK Down and Glenn Tipton, for sure, I'll give them their due on the same kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
But Maiden just has the sound that they generate with not only the guitars, but also the effects as well, like Edge does. And especially towards the 90s-ish, where they started using synth guitars a little bit,
mm-hmm.
which is weird for a metal band. Like,
yeah.
It's weird. But they still pulled it off, and they still sounded good. So, but that's my under-the-radar influence, definitely for sure, was Iron Maiden and Adrian Smith and Dave Murray from that band. They're still out there rocking and touring right now as we speak.
Well, I'm trying to think of other people that do those dual solos like that. And, you know, they don't, it's not their signature, but they had a period of time. Skinner did a lot of it.
Yeah. Skinner did a lot of it for sure. And I think that's kind of where DBT, not to keep going back to DBT, but they're kind of ones, that's where they kind of picked it up from.
Right.
Was Skinner to a certain extent, like the, Let There Be Rock song called Let There Be Rock. At the end, they have to do this kind of, takes place in an arena. It's like, it's part of the story of the album, the rock opera, the Southern rock opera is what it is. But, where they're in an arena and a crowd goes nuts and they're playing a solo like Skinner, like in the fifth thing. And it just sounded killer.
Yeah.
So, yeah, for sure. Oh, the Allman Brothers is another one.
Yes.
Yeah, where we had Dickie Betts and
Dwayne.
And then towards the end, you had Mr. Warren Haynes and Derek Trucks.
Yes.
So,
my other notables, Mr. David Gilmour on here, Steve Ray Vaughan, Mike Cooley, Jason Isbell, mm-hmm. Mike Campbell,
mm-hmm.
Noel Gallagher, and John Moreland.
There you go.
Brand new. Makes the list already.
Nice.
As soon as I heard this guy play, I printed out maybe 10 or 15 of his songs. Yeah, they are
right there at hand.
And because eventually, sometime soon, I want to do a solo cover album.
Yeah.
Of just songs just that I like.
Sitting down and just by yourself.
Songs I wish I wrote, yeah.
I definitely want to do that too. Yeah, for sure. Just grab a guitar and just record some stuff.
Yep.
Maybe, you know what we should do? Tommy, you'll let me hear me out. I can see the look on your face.
He already looks pissed.
He already looks mad, but hear me out.
You know what? Joe and I come up with an idea.
Right,
exactly. And he immediately thinks more work for me.
Right, exactly, which it is. But yeah. Listen, here's my idea, Tommy. Just sit. I know, okay? Give me a minute. All right, so remember Kiss, right?
I do.
Each one of them had their own solo album.
They did.
That's what we do. So Tommy can do a solo album of 70 stuff. We can all play on it, whatever. You can do yours and I can do mine. And then we'll have like different covers for all. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think it's great.
Exactly what we should do. What do you think, Tom?
But only Tom has. Tom wears the Kabuki makeup.
Yes. Yeah. Only Tom. And he has to wear the Peter Criss makeup. I mean, Peter Criss doesn't want to be Peter Criss. Let's be fair. He has to because he's the drummer.
Well, no.
He's our drummer. So he has to wear the Peter Criss. He does. That's the way it works.
He has to.
You have to wear the Gene Simmons.
No, not us.
And I, no,
we're
I,
just ourselves.
Okay, that's true.
He's the only one.
Yeah, yeah. You had sorry. What you don't makeup's expensive. What? All right. Well, whatever. Whatever, man. Okay. I'm just saying. Just throwing it out there. Just an idea. We're idea men here. That's what we do.
Yeah.
And that's my idea. Is that we do like Kiss Project, but you know, whatever. You decide, Tommy. Think about it. I don't need an answer right now. Just think about it.
Whose album was the best out of that one? I'm gonna say Ace.
Yeah. Because I think Ace Frehley's was produced by Eddie Kramer.
Okay.
I think. Yeah. Oh, here's something for you. So I was, see this, hear about this? apparently. Kiss Alive 1 and Kiss Alive 2. Now, it's already chronicled that 90% of that album was done in the studio.
Really?
It's already been, that's already, they just put live a crowd over it.
That's outstanding.
But it's been done, right? Rumor has it that on a track on 1 and a track on 2, the drummer was not Peter Criss.
Wow.
The drummer was Anton Figg.
No.
Yeah, from Letterman.
From, The most dangerous band.
Yeah, world's most dangerous band. That's the rumor. Now, Anton has come out and said, I don't remember doing it.
Okay.
That's how he put it.
Okay.
He goes, I can't 100%, because back then, things happened. I don't remember doing it. That doesn't mean I didn't do it. I just don't remember doing it.
Got it.
So, there you go. And Eddie Kramer came out and flat out said, yeah, Anton Figg did it.
Wow.
And he played on this song, and it's Anton Figg. It's not Peter Criss.
That's interesting.
But yeah, 90% of that album was not done live. They went back and did overdubs in the studio because they weren't good. They're not good musicians. And I got to wonder if that's the case for these live albums.
Mm-hmm.
What about the studio albums? Did they use... Because, I mean, the studio musicians have it all the time.
Right.
Literally, every album, at some point, maybe not Jason Isbell, but...
Right.
But there's studio musicians on just about everything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Monkees didn't play their own music, kids. Like, you know, right?
They did later on.
They did later. Maybe they tried, but, you know, there's studio musicians. So if one drum track on one album and then another drum track on another allegedly live album was done by a studio drummer, who knows what was studio musician?
You know, man, I've seen Kiss twice, and I will tell you both times it was top drawer.
I'm not saying they're not entertaining. I'm not. It's like wrestling. Wrestling's super entertaining, but there's no illusion of it being real. At least not in my book. In some people's book, maybe, but in my book, I know it's not real. But it's entertaining as fuck. That's why you keep watching it. That's why that's why I read about it on the internet every day, and I watch every fucking thing I can find because I'm entertained by it.
Are you not entertained?
Exactly. Like, I get it. But again, it goes back to, believe it or not, Reckless Kelly apparently used some studio musicians.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Because there was a time, if you remember the bass player, the big tall kid.
Yeah.
That got fired for whatever.
Yeah.
There was a time where they had to use session musicians for his parts, or later on. Now, the new band that's set up now with the new bass player, that's all of them. But my understanding is a couple albums there, kind of in between bass players. They used studio bass players, or they used, or maybe Willie played bass, or not Willie, but Cody maybe played bass. I don't know, but it happens.
It does.
To fix stuff.
My favorite don't remember story is Joe Walsh is riding in his limo, yeah, and he hears a song by Richard Marx. And there's a solo in the song,
yeah,
and Joe's like, somebody's ripping off my sound. That's my sound. And he gets out, he calls from the back of the car. He calls his agent and goes, who the fuck's ripping off my sound? I want legal action taken. That was you, Joe.
That was you, Joe.
You recorded that. I did. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you got paid $2,000 for it or whatever. Yeah. Went right up your nose, probably, but yeah.
Right up your nose.
Yeah. Not with a rubber hose. Vinnie Barbarino.
That's correct.
That's right. No, it's about the cocaines.
He loves cocaine.
Yeah, he used to. Or he used to love cocaine. He doesn't anymore.
And as he admits in the Eagles documentary, cocaine works for a while.
Until it didn't.
Right.
Right. Like Fleetwood Mac, it worked,
mm-hmm,
until it didn't work. And then, because that's the way it was back in the day.
Yeah.
Because like, we talk about this on different podcasts, but the music businesses did a 180, complete flip, right? You used to have to churn out albums to make your money. Now you just have to put something out and tour on it to make your money, which is unfortunate because the record business is what it is, you know, with Spotify and piracy and everything else. They just don't make enough money off their album sales to sustain themselves as a rule, unless you're, you know, Beyonce or Jay-Z or whatever. They have to make their money off touring. We already talked about this. Like if you go to a show try to buy some merch.
Yeah.
You know, like when we go to the Matthew Suite, I'll see if they have some vinyl. Maybe they have Girlfriend on vinyl or 100% Fun or Altered Beast or something like that on vinyl that I can give them, throw them a little something, because they don't make shirts my size, unfortunately. Soon they might if the pounds keep falling off. But so I have to buy something tangible. So I like to buy it. I want to buy an album. I want to build my album collection. So if they have something on vinyl that's $20, here's your $20. Thanks for coming to town. I know I bought a ticket, but some of the ticket money has to go to the house and everything else. This goes directly to you. And the house may get a cut of that, a small cut of that, but the majority of this goes to you. So here's my contribution to your career. I'm buying this album.
You have a turntable yet?
Soon.
Okay.
I got a great story about that.
You amassed this vinyl collection.
All two of them. Yeah. In my head, I have a vinyl collection.
Okay.
I have two tangible LPs.
Okay.
I got the Nashville Sound by Jason Isbell
and Trace.
And Trace by Sunvolt. So I was at a used record store in the Chicago suburbs because I was on my way at the Sox game. So I left a little bit early and went. I was just out of curiosity, went by there. They had the turntable I was looking for. Used. $60. It's $90 on Amazon. They had it used for $60. But the store has a policy. They have to hold everything they buy for 7 days, like a pawn shop. Mm-hmm. It wasn't a pawn shop, but maybe that's the law of the town they're in or whatever. And the day I was there was not that day that it was on sale. So I was thinking about going back there this weekend. I don't got time to go this weekend, but whatever. Go back there and see if it's still there. I doubt it is because it was in really good shape.
Right.
And it was only $60. So I'm like, dinger. And I was in two record stores today here in Normal. And that one place had them. They were $100 for anything used. Vinyl. Turntable.
Yeah.
Wise. It was $100. I'm like, it's more than I want to spend. Yeah, I can get a brand new one for $100. But at any rate, soon, the vinyl collection will come. And when that day comes, you all will rue the day. No, I'm just kidding. It doesn't matter. Really. I just got to find some of this good use stuff. That's hard to find.
It is.
Yeah, because here in Normal, they have... There's two record stores that are literally two doors down from each other. There's like a record store there's a comic shop between the two and maybe one other business, but the one is basically all used. They might be owned by the same people. It wouldn't surprise me, but the one's all used or mainly used and the other one's mainly new. So you have the best of both worlds there. So you can go crate digging through the used stuff. And if there's something new that comes out that you want, you can go to the new, whatever. It's a good racket they have going over there.
Right.
if it is indeed that way, I don't know.
The new vinyl, what's the thickness? I mean...
180 grams. They take 180 grams of pellets.
Okay.
And then when they press the record, if you know how records are made, if you don't, go on YouTube and you can see how. But these 180 grams of vinyl, I believe, is the case. So it's thicker.
Yeah.
It's like some of the, I remember some albums from the day were thin.
The ones that you would get from Columbia House. I think Blow in the Wind.
Yeah, exactly. They're basically magazine pages.
Yeah.
But these are really thick and they're good quality. They hold their sound really well. They last longer.
Right.
All albums will last with the right amount of care.
Correct. But I did not give my albums that when I was a youngster.
No?
I didn't start taking care of stuff until I got CDs.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, I treated all my shit got all thrown out.
That's why we can't have nice things, Joe.
That's right. Amen to that, brother. So back to the interwebs.
Yeah.
For a moment. Is there anything on the interwebs? Streaming? Netflix on YouTube?
Yeah, I can't believe I didn't share this
on podcasts the or anything first like that?
Podcast that we did. My favorite podcast of all time is My Favorite Murder.
It is.
Karen Kilgariff, comedian, writer, head writer on a lot of TV shows. And then Georgia Hardstark, who, believe it or not, was probably most famous for doing shows on the Food Network. Like dessert shows or...
If I see a picture of her, I probably know who it is.
You would know her.
I'm a Food Network junkie.
Well, it would be Allie Ward and Georgia Hurst. It was Allie and Georgia would do these things.
Okay. Because, I mean, like, not to interrupt what you were saying. Yeah, no. But a lot of people ask me, so did you watch the game that day when you were off? No. No, the 99% chance I'm watching one of three things. Food Network, History Channel.
Top Gear.
or
some on Netflix.
A&E.
Oh, A&E.
Those are usually the three, or I'm on YouTube, but YouTube's my main thing. But if I'm sitting watching TV on the couch just trying to decompress,
That's you're not watching sports.
I am not, as a rule. I know. But anyway, I digress.
No, most of the guys from the you know, ESPN and the Score say the same thing.
Yeah.
That
we get enough at work.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Interesting. So and basically they are on their second season now. When they first started, maybe third season, when my wife and I first saw them, we saw a live show in Chicago. They did a live podcast.
I remember you going to that. Yeah.
And basically they just tell stories about murderers. I mean, if you like true crime at all, they're great. And there's humor in it. And what I love about it is they don't take themselves so seriously, a lot like my good friend Joe and I try to do here.
Correct.
Where, you know, there's a certain amount of research to be done because you got to tell a story.
Correct.
Yeah. But, you know, digging deep isn't their thing.
Right.
And they make mistakes and they own them.
Yeah.
And
we 100% own any mistake that we make.
In fact, that's where I got Corrections Corner from. I got it from their show.
Tommy, quiet over there. We know. Okay, we get it. We'll get it next time. Relax. All right, go ahead. Sorry. I had to keep him quiet.
I understand. So the Golden State Killer just got caught.
Yeah.
Like last week. Yeah. And the tie-in there, Patton Oswalt's wife,
Michelle McNamara.
Correct. Mm-hmm. Michelle McNamara. Yeah. Pretty much figured out who it was, and by working with law enforcement they were able to get this done. And I don't think that law enforcement wants to promote this as much of a thing because there are so many amateur sleuths out there now that look at cold cases and try to dig everything up they can on the internet and on Reddit and tracking these things down. But it has been helpful.
Yeah.
And there's one guy in particular that's an author, and unfortunately his name escapes me, but he was in on this one as well. But he's been part of solving 6 or 7, you know, cold cases that, you know, 20, 30 years old.
Yeah.
And, you know, a lot of it is through DNA.
Yeah, for sure.
But, there, you know, states and a lot of these places don't have money,
right,
to run these tests,
to even think, or even think about going through the backlog
to reopen it. Right,
like we have too much going on now,
and that's actually something that Mariska Hargitay has a charity, I guess it is, but to get money to help get rid of that backlog.
Yeah, because there's a lot.
For rapes.
Yeah, for sure.
Specifically.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
The amount of rapes that happen in our country as a whole.
Right.
Trying to go back and try to solve some of them. People don't have the time for that. Because there's still more, there's more going on.
Yeah, and murder,
of course,
takes precedence.
Correct.
So, I mean, they go right at the front of the line.
Right.
So there's, you know, stacks and stacks and stacks. But she's made a lot of headway. Mm-hmm. And I think the last I heard, they were half caught up.
Wow. That's
good. In the country. Good. Yeah. Nationally. I mean, it's gotten a lot of funding.
I'm assuming that they, and not only that, but I'm assuming they have people that fresh out of college, I'm assuming that probably, or maybe interns even, getting their master's degree, for example, in criminal justice or something like that, or forensics or something like that, that are pitching in here.
Right.
As part of their education, or just out of nobility, I guess, is the best way to put it.
Yeah. And again, that's more civilians. I mean, that's somebody
for sure
helping out.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And my text ringer is the show's sign off every week, where she asks her cross-eyed Siamese cat, Elvis, if he wants a cookie, and he meows. So
every time it goes off, it makes me laugh.
It's
never not funny.
It's good stuff.
Yeah, it is. It's hilarious.
All right, man, that's mine. You got another one?
Yeah, man. To touch on the podcast real quick, I stumbled on this. It was an article on either Gizmodo or a Gizmodo-like site, maybe Jalopnik. I don't remember, but
you're saying words that
I know.
Don't.
There's a a group of websites headed by Gizmodo, Gizmodo.com, that talk about just a variety of things. I think they bought the AV Club from The Onion.
Oh,
like I think they were good. The Onion shut it down, or they're co-doing it. I don't know about. Maybe that's exactly where I heard it. I think it was from the AV Club.
Okay,
It's called Slow Burn. They did 8 episodes, and they did them either earlier this year or late last year, one of the two. And it's about a topic of mine that I love hearing stuff about. That's Watergate. Watergate always, for some reason, All the President's Men, the movie, is one of my top 5 movies. I love Watergate.
It's Watergate about and the Kennedy assassination, and, man. Yeah, I can't get enough of either one.
I know. And did you see this, hear about this on the Twitters today? Apparently, the Kennedys want to reopen the case.
Really?
Yeah.
Outstanding.
Yeah, but we'll see about that. But anyway, I digress. And the podcast is about people that were a part of Watergate that maybe weren't in the movie or in the book. People that had a big influence. Now, they talk a lot. Like, the first one is about John Mitchell's wife.
Oh.
John Mitchell's wife, Marilyn. Marilyn Mitchell, I believe, was her name. She, bit of a drunk, bit of a snoop, and bit of a blabbermouth.
Nice. Not a good combination in Washington.
No. No, not. Especially when your husband's the attorney general and also the head of the committee to reelect the president, hence known as Creep, which is kind of funny.
It is.
But it fits. The acronym fits. But anyway, I digress. And there was an incident. It happened right when stuff was starting to break about the break-in, about the bugging and everything else. John Mitchell sent his wife to California, got her out of D.C., just said, why don't you go see your family or friends, whatever, in California? Why don't you get out of here for a while? This all happened, I believe, a day or two after the break-in. She goes to California and is out of her mind, right? Drinking, whatever. And there's a Secret Service agent assigned to her saying, don't let her out of your sight. Don't let her talk to anybody. That's the guy's orders. So Marilyn Mitchell sneaks off, gets on the phone with Helen Thomas. Now, if you don't know who Helen Thomas is, she's a reporter in D.C., been there forever. Like, she just
literally
retired. Literally forever. She just retired, I think, 3 years ago.
I think Lincoln's press conference was her first
one. I believe you might be right. Or Teddy Roosevelt, one of the two. So they're friends. So she gets on the phone with Helen Thomas and goes, wait till you hear what I'm about to tell you, and starts talking about Watergate. Now, before she can say any details about it,
because
she's going, I got all this information, and she's drunk. Wait till you hear I got this information about, boom, boom. The Secret Service agent finds her, walks in the room, and she starts, I'm getting chills just thinking about it, walks in the room with her, and she's yelling, get away from me, get away from me, and the phone goes dead. The Secret Service agent had literally ripped the cord out of the wall.
As you do.
She goes out on the balcony and starts, I'm being imprisoned against my will. She's, in a way, she is, right?
Right.
But this is the wife of the Attorney General of the country.
Right.
And
help! I'm being repressed!
Yes. Yes. Exactly. And Helen Thomas is on there on the phone trying to get a hold of somebody. And finally gets a hold of the hotel, and the Secret Service agent had locked her in this closet or room, went down the lobby, told them if anybody calls, she's not available. Mrs. Mitchell's not available. And so Helen Thomas finally gets through to the hotel, and the clerk says, Mrs. Mitchell is detained, or not detained is the wrong way to put it, but she's not available right now. She won't be able to talk to you. And that's how the podcast starts.
Nice.
Explaining her role in it. And they talk quite a few episodes talk about John Dean.
Yeah.
Who was actually in All the President's Men.
Right.
Talk about the Watergate break-in. Talk about the funding that went into the Watergate break-in.
But they think we already know Ehrlichman, Haldeman.
So. The nuts and bolts of it are still true. But there's just details. and I don't want to give anything away.
Don't, because I want to listen to it.
Right, but that are very...
Give us the name again.
Slow Burn.
That's
it. It's created by Slate, slate.com. And that was just season one. It was 8 episodes. They're about 20 minutes long. So you can burn through them pretty quick. The second season, and this is where it gets good, even better, not even better necessarily, but it's about the impeachment of Bill Clinton, about that whole dealio. So looking very forward to
shit
that.
Shit show, yeah, witch hunt.
Yep. Yeah. 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 I'm looking very forward to that. So that's the, my podcast anyway, Slow Burn.
All right.
I recommend the Watergate one, and then stay tuned for the impeachment of Bill Clinton. Very good.
Right on, man. Well, I got one last thing for you. Netflix.
Yep.
My love for all things Gallagher led me...
You like Smashing Watermelons?
They did the theme song for a show that was on the BBC in the early 2000s and 2005. I would like to it's called The Royal Family. This old town and it's kind of Northerners living in an estate, and basically their life is lived on the couch in front of the TV.
Yep.
And every episode is that.
Mm-hmm.
You really get to feel like a fly on the wall and see what it's like to be living with this family. And it was a neat take. I think the whole idea is neat. Kind of Archie Bunker-ish, mm-hmm, a little bit.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not supposed to root for Jim Royle, but part of me does. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's interesting. And you become part of their life, and then their daughter gets married, has a baby, you get to see all that dynamic, and it's interesting. And they've got, I think, 3 or 4 seasons on Netflix now.
Nice.
I'm only through, I think I just started season 4. So.
All right. I'll have to fire that up when I get a chance. So my video internets thing real quick is I should tell you this up front. My degree is in IT, so I still have a fondness for computers, especially building them. Like, has always been a thing of mine. I've built my last 2 or 3 computers by myself. And there's a channel called Linus's Tech Tips, and it's this Canadian geek, and he's a geek, believe me. He is full-on geek, but his information is impeccable, and he approaches it from a, it's kind of deep geek in a way, but entertaining. Simply entertaining, because there's things you think about, like, something would come up and you go, why is it doing this? Like, why? Like, they show him building a machine and the thing just will not boot up. And he's like, why is this thing booting up? Why the hell, you know? And it's really good. And his information is outstanding. His reviews are really good. And he's got like a shit ton of, I mean, over, I think, 2 million subscribers, some crazy amount. It's ridiculous. The amount of money he makes off YouTube must be huge, even with monetization and things like that.
Wow.
Yeah, he must make a ton. With that many subscribers and that many views, like a bunch of the ones I were watching had 900,000 views, million views, and they get paid per 1,000 views. So, I mean, like, imagine that. So, so if you're so inclined, I recommend Linus's Tech Tips on YouTube. It's a pretty cool little thing if you're a geeky like dude like myself.
Well, goodbye. And don't think it hasn't been a little slice of heaven, because it hasn't.
All right, we want to thank... Oh, almost. It almost worked. Try it again. Oh.
Come on, Tom.
Come on, Tom. There it is. There's McCaskey. Attaboy. We want to thank you for listening to It's That Podcast. Hey, listen, contact us, please. We're begging you here. On Twitter, I am at Triple Lindy's. Jason is at J, the letter, Sleet Shirley. You can hit us on Facebook at facebook.com/itsthatpod. You can also email us. I am Joe at itsthatpodcast.com. Jason is Jason at itsthatpodcast.com. And you can go to our website, which is www.itsthatpodcast.com. or you can subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and also the Podbean app. Thanks for listening. We enjoyed making it, and we'll see you next time on It's That Podcast.